everyone. Welcome to the Crafty Garden Mom podcast. My name is Tanisha. If you're a new listener, welcome, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for giving me a listen. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. So I hope everyone's doing well. We have been doing just fine over here in sunny Maryland. I am very happy because it seems spring has decided to stick around finally. After predictions of snow last weekend, I'm just very happy to see sunshine and I can go out in my garden and see what I can revive possibly from the frost we had the last few days. It is Wednesday, April 13th, 2016, just in case you needed to know the date. And like I said, we've been good. I have been pretty good. The reason I have not podcasted in a while is the month of March took it out of me. I had every intention of podcasting early in the month, and then I came down with what started out as a small cold, not too bad, and quickly moved into bronchitis. And then I woke up one morning with conjunctivitis, which is pink eye. And then I think within a day or two of all of that, I lost my voice completely. And I don't want to say I get laryngitis easily, but it is some, I've noticed over the last 10 years or so of my life, where I don't think I ever got laryngitis through my college years. I mean, from childhood through my college years, I can't even remember once ever losing my voice. Big surprise for those of you who know me and what a big talker I am. But it seems in my 30s and now my 40s, almost every time I get a cold, one of the first things to go is my voice. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, this one was really bad. Usually my voice will go and come back within a week to 10 days, the entire month of March. I mean, I'm thinking, because I know I still was just getting my voice back during spring break, which was the last week of March, and it was still not very strong, and I was still coughing quite a bit when I tried to talk for more than just a few sentences. So yeah, this one lasted a long time. It was a pretty bad cold. I was in bed for about a week, just had no energy, went to the doctor. You know, they was pretty much, because it was bronchitis, they gave me stuff, but none of it seemed to be working. And then the pink eye is just, whatever. I'm just, yeah. I'm so over that. I don't know why. Like, just the littlest thing, it seems, just gets in my eyes, and I get it. But anyway, I'm feeling better. You might notice from my voice, it's still a little scratchy, but, and I will apologize up front because I do have to clear my throat, still quite a bit. Yeah, it took its toll on me. I didn't post about it on Facebook, the woe is me posts and that kind of thing about being sick. I just kind of laid low and rested, and my family helped me out quite a bit. The girls were very cute. They made me tea quite often and, you know, left mommy alone to nap and rest as needed. And the husband kept them busy and in their activities. And, you know, up until spring break, of course, they were going to school. So it was fine. I was very happy to just have that week of rest, where if I wasn't sleeping, I was just laying in the bed watching TV, catching up on shows. Netflix having it in your TV. I guess it's, what is it, a smart TV? I don't even know what they're called. I know smartphones, but I guess, are they smart TVs where with one, like on the remote control, there is a Netflix button and an Amazon Prime button or an Amazon button? We have that in our upstairs television, in our bedroom television, and it is such a nice thing. I know people have different opinions about having a bedroom in the TV in the bedroom. I love it. I don't need to fall asleep to it, but for purposes like when I was sick and in the bed for a whole week, it was Fantastic. And then I also linked, we have Apple TV, and we have it, we have that one in our family room, but my dad, who is the gadget king, he happened to have an extra Apple TV little black box, you know, the thing you just need to hook in to get yourself Apple TV. And he gave it to us, I think it was around Christmas time, or maybe a little earlier, but anyway, he gave it to us. I know, how many people do you know have just an extra Apple TV console sitting around? That's my dad. But anyway, so we put that up in our bedroom, and it was awesome to be able to link my iPad, where I have podcasts and all of that queued up, and to be able to link it and watch it on a larger screen as I'm laying in the bed, sipping my tea and trying to keep down crackers. So that was good. I needed the rest. It was much needed, and I am definitely feeling much better. But it was funny because after I went through, you know, the cycle of the cold and definitely felt much better, was able to go back to work, people were still kind of giving me a wide berth because I sounded so bad. And I would try and tell them, honestly, I promise, I don't feel bad. I'm not sick. But they were just like, well, you still sound like you need to be staying at home. Because I sounded. And then if you've ever had laryngitis, you also know you go through that period where you have no voice at all. And then your voice slowly starts to come back. And you probably, if you want to, you know, you push it a little bit because you want to be able to communicate. And then with laryngitis, the part that nobody tells you about is you definitely go through that sexy radio voice or sexy talk period where your voice sounds, it's that husky. I'm trying to think of an actress who's well known for that kind of voice. And it was so funny because people I work with, friends, were all like, yeah, don't take that voice out on the road too often, Tanisha, because it was really funny. Because, oh my gosh, it was some of the comments. Yeah, I won't repeat them here. This is a family-friendly show. And these are definitely people that I've worked with for many years. And I know there's no sexual harassment involved in their comments. But we had some good... They were having more fun with my coming out of laryngitis voice than even I was. Because I really couldn't hear my... You don't hear yourself that way. You know, it's kind of funny. But... yeah. Excuse me. So yeah, I don't know if anybody's ever brought that up to you before, if you've had laryngitis, but everybody who goes through it pretty much goes through that day or two. And like I said, mine lasted a little longer because, it took a good, almost a month for me to get over the laryngitis. But anyway, I'm feeling much better. And the girls had a great spring break. My parents very kindly took the girls for most of it. My dad in particular had all kinds of activities planned with the girls. He really loves having them. My mom loves having them too. I think, she's not as active as my dad is still, both physically and, you know, with what she likes to do. However, my mom has one granddaughter, Maddie. She's the youngest, who is very much a couch potato, very much a couch potato, and is much calmer and easier to do quiet activities with, whereas Sam is very, very active, has to be doing something, bounce, you know, pretty much is your bounce off the walls kind of kid. In the evening, when she's ready to wind down, she can definitely be quiet. And I think I've mentioned here before, I've gotten on her that I know she knows how to be still when she wants to, because I've seen her sit in front of a computer playing Minecraft for 3-4 hours straight. So she cannot try and get me I have so much energy, I can't sit still when we're out in public and she needs to. But anyway, so the girls had a great time. We're definitely spoiled to the point where we should have hosed them down in the front yard before we let them back in the house. But they always have a good time with the grandparents. And what's really funny is I don't remember what it was, but I was going to call my mom like a day after the girls came back. And I think my husband kind of said, don't call them. They're not picking up the phone for a good week. They have to recover. And it was kind of true because I couldn't get a hold of them for a good 48 hours. And my brother texted me. He lives in Texas. And he goes, did mom and dad have the girls this past week? And I said, try almost a week. And he goes, oh, no wonder they're like, yeah, we'll call you in a day or two. They were in grandchildren overload, but we need detox. So, yeah, anyway, the husband and I had a good time. The house was so quiet. It was so nice. It was nice. I'm sorry. I'm not one of those parents who has to lie and say they always want their kids around them and with them. And we love having our children around us and with us often. And they are, but when you get a little break of several days, all parents should just fess up and admit that it is awesome. So during that time, because I was feeling better, thank goodness, because I got so much done in the house, you'd think that I would use the time to make stuff. And I used a little bit of the time that I had to myself because my husband didn't take the week off. He was still going to work during the week. So I was home alone during the day. And again, awesome. And my husband his feelings are not hurt. He kind of knows that's how I roll, and he's fine with it, and he gets it, and he gets me, which is why we are perfect for each other. But anyway, I had thought at first I was going to use the majority of the time to make stuff, which is what I love to do, but I decided instead to finish off what I'd started and had been kind of petering out on, and that is decluttering and purging stuff from our house. And so I basically went on a room by room, day by day. I chose several rooms each day, Monday, Tuesday. I think, yeah, they came back Thursday night. So each day for 4 days, I purged, probably for a good 4 to 5 hours a day. And I started in the place I was avoiding the most, and I Ate That Frog, which is the book from Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, one of my favorite motivational books. And I chose the place I'd been avoiding the most, which was our basement and our basement storage area, which is Area 51 for us. Just everything seasonally gets dumped there. You know, when I purge the girls' clothes and just put them in a bin and go, oh, I'll sort through these later, and they get put in there. Clothes that are given to us that are maybe too big for the girls right now, but, you know, later I'll go through them and see what the girls can wear. Yeah. So I went to that area first and said, you know what, on Monday, the first day, that is all I'm going to focus on. And I'm thinking, of course, it's going to maybe 2 to 4 hours it'll take me. It took me the entire day. I think I started at 9, and my husband texted me about dinner, and I said, we're going out because I'm not cooking after this day I've had, which he was fine with. But yeah, I think I spent a good 8-9 hours the first day just doing the basement, which was so worth it. So worth it. I completely cleaned out. Does anybody remember that show Clean Sweep with Peter? Oh, I'm drawing a blank. What's his last name? And I should know it. I want to say Peter Cetera, but that is so not it. And I could start singing The Glory of Love, but no, I'm not. Anyway, Peter, somebody is shouting it out into their headphone microphone right now. But anyway, Peter from Clean Sweep was the organizing cleaning expert on that show. And just side note, I so wish Netflix would pick up, or Amazon Prime, either one, whatever, would pick up the old episodes of Clean Sweep. Wouldn't you, wouldn't that be awesome? I would mainline those, one after the other, man. I loved that show. There was another purging show around that time, too, and I'm drawing a blank with what it was called. I think it was also on TLC when TLC actually used to teach you something. His big thing was he completely cleaned out a room. Like basically take, before you can purge or clean, or you have to take everything out of the room. Like make it as if it was a move-in day for you into a brand new house. And so that's pretty much what I did. There were some things that were a little too heavy, like, you know, those long 6-foot banquet type tables that we have several of those. I wasn't moving, I'm not moving those. There was no need for those. They weren't going anywhere anyway. That is where they belong in our storage area. So stuff like that, was either too big or too heavy, or I was just like, you can take one look at it. Like we have a fake Christmas tree, which technically in the mindset I was in of getting rid of stuff we haven't used in a while, I should have purged, but there is still a part of me that feels one Christmas I will have enough energy to put up more than just one tree, meaning we always get a live tree, and then on our front entryway is where I used to put this fake Christmas tree, which is a full-size 6-7 foot Christmas tree. So I just left it where it was. I wasn't moving that either. Anyway, but pretty much everything else I took out of the room, staged it in another area of the basement, and then went through each item one by one and decided keep it, donate it, discard it, and created several huge piles there and walked up the flights of stairs to the stuff that needed to be thrown out. And made huge donation piles, and then found at some point that where the Salvation Army truck used to only come once a month in our neighborhood, now you can, if you have more than, I think, a dozen bags or a dozen boxes, they will schedule an appointment for the same week for you. And so they were able to do that, and they came on that Friday. But I cleaned out that entire storage area of the basement and was able to put the seasonal stuff in its own little seasonal section. So yes, now I'm like one of those fancy schmancy organized people who have here's my Christmas section. And when summer comes, here are my summer mantle decorations. Yes, they're in their own Rubbermaid bin here. And here's all my fall decorations, and they're in their own large Rubbermaid bin. And yes, I do have kids' clothes sorted by size, and you know, this is the fall stuff that Samantha used to wear that Maddie will be able to move into probably first or second grade. And just so fancy now. I'm so proud of my basement storage area. It's too embarrassing to invite people over to say, come see, not my new quilt, not my new furniture. Come see my basement storage area. But I want to. Because of all the areas of my house that I purged and organized and cleaned out, that, surprisingly enough, is the area I'm the most proud of. And I made some hard decisions. There was some stuff that we'd been given as wedding gifts that I said, you know, we're coming up on our 12th wedding anniversary. We haven't even taken this stuff out of the box. Now, stuff that had our names on it, or we had a few items like this fancy cake cutter. And I mean, when I say fancy, it's really fancy. It's not, you know, coffee cake, weekly coffee cake or something kind of use. This is like a sterling silver with from Tiffany's kind of cake cutter. And, you know, there's a part of me that's like, we should probably just use it. Why not? Nobody else is going to use it. Why, you know, we could, you know, I'm a butter knife. Cut a cake with a butter knife. It's really funny when I look through some of the stuff, I'm like, we have some really fancy stuff and we are not really fancy people. I like nice stuff. There are very nice items in my home that I enjoy and we use and I like to look at and that kind of thing. But, and as much as I love Tiffany's and Tiffany's items, yes, I'm fancy enough to say that, I am not a Tiffany's like cake cutter kind of girl. 'Cause I'm fine with the Sara Lee pound cake. You know, and yes, you could cut a Sara Lee pound cake with your Tiffany's cake cutter. But like I said, I'm perfectly fine using my everyday butter knife to do it because it's just going to be eaten anyway. Anyway, all that aside, I purged stuff that for years I had kept just for sentimental value. Like, oh, this was given to me as a wedding gift, or this is what I got when I first moved into my first apartment. And that kind of thing. And I said, you know, I don't need this. And there was stuff even that I had once upon a time said, I'm going to pass this on to my kids. And I looked at it and I'm like, yeah, they're not going to want this. You know, old comforters and stuff, not quilts, but just bedspreads that for whatever reason, I was like, oh, we'll save this. Oh, I'll save this. Oh, look at these sheets. You know, no, not, we needed none of that stuff. So I purged it. Like, and my goal had been to reduce what was in the storage by 50 to 60%. Like half of it had to be gone. So meaning if I opened up a box, half of the things that were in that box, my goal was to eliminate. I got rid of a lot of scrapbooking supplies. That was a little bit painful, I'll admit. I did not get rid of pictures, but those I need to go through and probably purge a lot of those as well, or forward them on to family members who would enjoy them. I also realized there was a part of me in this that I stopped and was like, this is kind of selfish, because I realized at one point when I was really, really into scrapbooking, my mom, who she was not into scrapbooking, she gave me all of the boxes of our old photos, family photos from when I was growing up, from, you know, with my brother and I as kids, pictures of my grandmother and, you know, on both sides of my family, most of them who are deceased now, family members who've passed away. but mainly a lot of pictures of me and my brother when we were kids. And I realized at one point going through them quickly. And I'm thinking to myself, he doesn't have any of this. Like, my brother has none of these pictures because, you know, there was no digital then. It was all film. There was only one, you only got one copy. You know, maybe you would go occasionally if there was a really good photo and get multiple copies. But my parents never got more than one set of prints. And so and they were all in those, you know, Photo Express envelopes. So there's tons of those Photo Express envelopes in groups and you could open them. And a lot of times you can just look through the first couple of photos and realize, oh, that was our Disney trip in 1982. And this was our, you know, beach trip in 1984 and that kind of thing. Or this was so-and-so's birthday party. And, you know, they were just in those kind of groups. And I realized he has none of this. Like, I am the holder of all of our family photos. And when I say family, I mean the family I grew up with, my parents and my brother, the four of us, as well as our extended family. But all of that history is, you know, pictures of my mom pregnant with my brother, or when he was, you know, just some fun photos, because he was, my brother was very, very cute little boy growing up. Really, really cute. And he has none of those. And I just was like, oh my gosh, this is so, like, this is selfish. Like, I need to go through these and, you know, that's something that sooner than later I am definitely going to do, because it doesn't sit well with me, like, just knowing that he now having his own children who, excuse me, his oldest just turned 4, and knowing that my own, when my daughter's girls turn 4 or 5, they start asking questions about, you know, mommy and daddy as children, and they want to, you can tell that curiosity is, what do you mean you were a kid one time? Well, what did you look like? You know, and they ask, they want to know a little bit more about you. And it is such a pleasure when you show your kids pictures of you as a child, like the look on their face was, that's you? Like, you really were a kid one time? You know, and that's grandma or grandpa or nana, you know, when they were younger, when they were like being moms to you, like just those kinds of things. And now that, you know, my brother has my niece and nephew, I know they're going to start asking those questions. And so it doesn't sit well with me to know that I am holding all of the visual evidence and impact for them of their dad's growing up. So now, selfishly, I am definitely going to go through each of the photos and scan the ones that I know I want to keep a copy of, and then send them off to him. And it shouldn't take me that long. And I'm actually, we have a 3-in-1 HP scanner that's probably on its last legs. We've had it for so long, and it doesn't scan very well. It's not a very good scanner. So I'm thinking that there's probably a photo scanner that I'm hoping I can find. I'm sure with a quick Amazon search, I'm hoping I can find something where you can just basically feed, almost like when you put something to laminate, you just feed the photo through and it quickly scans the photo into an SD card that also plugs into that same scanner, and it's almost like a portable device. I'm hoping I can find something like that where it can, you know, quickly let me just scan in the photos that I know I want to keep copies of, and then, you know, send off the originals to my brother. Because, you know, and I could, and I'll probably, if that is something possible, I could probably also just make a copy then of the SD card and send that as well, so he has it in both forms. But there's something fun even about some of the actual printed photos from that time. I mean, they had a compact camera that printed the mini squares that are probably about maybe 4 inches by 4 inches, and they're pre-rounded at the corners, and you would take them to the Photoshop, and that's how they would print out. Tons of Polaroids. We have Polaroid cameras, or we had several Polaroid cameras, and so we have tons of Polaroid pictures. You know, those are the kinds of things that, yes, there's modern ones, modern Polaroids, but like, those are the kinds of things that you can't convey even in a digital photo. So anyway, that's just a little bit about what I did over spring break. The rest of the house definitely got purged. Our office, I completely cleaned out books, stacks and stacks and stacks of books. Some got donated, some got given away, some got taken when I went back to work. But I made some hard decisions, even about books that I've been holding on to for a long time. And got rid of a lot of them. The only place I have not gone through once more, because I did it maybe 6 or 7 months ago, was my craft studio. Many podcast episodes ago, I mentioned going through and I got rid of about 6 or 7 bags of fabric and old craft supplies that I just wasn't using anymore, and old yarn that I wasn't using anymore, and cross stitch supplies and that kind of thing. And I went through all of that at that time and purged. So that area I felt was pretty much purged. However, recently I went back in there and I was like, kind of with my new mentality of just, if you haven't used it, if you really are not going back there anytime soon, even with your crafting, you need to get rid of it. And maybe a year or 2 or 5 down the road, if you decide, hey, I want to do that again, part of the joy, for me at least, is buying the supplies, is the shopping. So yeah, I would just go and, like, for example, I got rid of most of my cross-stitching supplies. If I decided I wanted to get back into cross-stitching again, it's not such an expensive hobby that it would break my bank to go out and buy some cloth, some threads, some needles, and a hoop or two and get going, right? Like, it's not going to break the bank. It's not the same kind of decision as if you were getting rid of your one and only sewing machine, right? And even if you haven't sewn in 6 months, it is to me still something that it's a much more financial impact to decide you want to get back into sewing when the item that you need the most is pretty expensive, or, you know, relatively so than other hobbies. So anyway, that is a room that I'm going to go back into and probably take another pass at, because there's some things in there that I'm not using and have no plans to use. But anyway, the house is much cleaner. Areas of the house that, or surfaces of the house that have not been cleaned off in a long time are now cleaned off. I've pulled out some things that I found in the storage that I was like, oh, I forgot I had that, and am now putting them to use. Another thing is some quilts that I'd had in storage. I rotated several quilts that have been hung in my house for a long time and hung up some quote unquote new quilts that have not been out in 5+ years, and am enjoying walking by and seeing those quilts now. So just those kinds of things are making me feel really good, and it's just really nice to be in our home now. Not that I'm saying it wasn't nice to be in our home, but you know what I mean. It's just kind of cool to walk by and see some new stuff to us that has just been languishing in storage or just underneath things, underneath piles, that kind of thing. So that's all good. So moving on quickly to some finished objects. Since my last episode, I finished Maddie's socks. I took a picture of those. I posted them on Instagram. If I can find the photo again, I'll post it in the show notes. But if you're not following me on Instagram, to be honest, Instagram ate my blog. And it's kind of funny because I really do see now Instagram serving pretty much the same purpose my blog did. Now, I do miss the writing aspect of it, where I would actually write out a whole blog post and put my thoughts down. But I haven't really felt the urge or desire to do that. Like, I just haven't. And I like the snapshot of time and of life that Instagram provides, because that's pretty much what I was trying to convey on my blog. So for now, other than the podcast episode, show notes, and maybe 1 or 2 posts if I have something to say, or if I have something more detailed I want to talk about or show pictures of, then I will post, of course, on my blog. I'm not closing down my blog, but Instagram is probably on a day-to-day basis, and I don't take a photo and post a photo every day, but to get a snapshot of what's going on with me, Instagram's probably where it's at. And I'm Crafty Garden Mom on Instagram if you are interested in following me. So I finished her socks, and of course the weather turned 75 degrees, I think, the day after, and she likes them. She ran around the house in them, but she did say her feet got too hot after a while. So she took them off, and I don't think she's worn them since. She has them laying on her dresser in her room. But anyway, they were fun. They were made out of Knit Picks Felici yarn. I want to say it was the Jelly Bean colorway, but it's just multiple kind of tutti frutti looking colors. Very cute, especially for a little girl. The other a knitted item that I finished is the Holden shawl, and I posted a picture of this also on Instagram. And this was a shawl that I made using Knit Circus yarns, and it is a gradient, and in the Fashion Week colorway. The base, it was the Opulence base. This was a delight to knit. The pattern was awesome. It's a very well liked and multiple projects in Ravelry pattern. It's been around for, I think, a number of years now. Anyway, it was a delight to knit, and the yarn was awesome to work with. I love the effect that the gradient in this yarn and the way they dyed it, the effect was, it's just a very dramatic, high impact statement piece type of garment to wear. I've worn it several times since I finished it because I love wearing it, and I get compliments and comments on it all the time. And I am definitely, I have quite a few projects coming up that I want to do first, but I, in a heartbeat, would buy another gradient yarn from Knit Circus. They're pricey, but they're very worth it. Again, you get such a good impact and out of your knitting from using this type of gradient. And what I liked also is some of the gradients I've seen, the dyer, I think, has a harder time with the transition, you know, going from the light to the dark, and or from dark to light, however they dye it. You can do either way. The dyer, and I cannot remember her name, but that doesn't matter. Knit Circus, whoever does the dyeing for these gradients knows what they're doing, because they have a very, very good transition. Both, I've seen them where it's a gradient of a single color, like it goes from dark forest or even emerald green to a very, very pale, pale mint green. That was one that interested me. I've seen the blues, the reds, all of that. There's one that's gorgeous that's an orange that goes down to a very, very, very pale peach color. But the one I chose is multiple colors. So it went from a dark purples to the fuchsias, then into the reds, and then the oranges to a tangerine kind of color was the lightest color. But anyway, a light tangerine color. The transitions in some dyers can be pretty harsh. Like it's almost like a striping, whereas this dye job that they do is very gradual. You have multiple rows of the transition, and they also blend several of the darker colors into those medium tones. So that also helps with the way your eye sees it, where again, you're not just seeing a harsh line that almost is like a stripe. It just really helps the blend. And this was throughout the whole skein. And there were some parts where I was like, why is this so light? Like it's so much lighter than the dye. But again, if you think about color theory and in painting, for example, there's a reason that painters, if you really get up close to, especially impressionist paintings, when they would do some of those gradations like Monet in the water lilies, if you get up really, if you have the opportunity to see it in real life, when you get up really, really close to the painting, which In the US is not as often because a lot of times they will not let you get up to them. But over in Europe, many times, like in any of the French museums, art museums I went to, you could literally, if you'd wanted, put your nose right on the Monet. Now, of course, I would never do that. And most of the people are respectful enough, they wouldn't do that. But you can get very, very close to the paintings. And you can see where even on the darker areas, Monet or Manet or any of the Impressionists, and I'm just using them as an example, they're not the only types of painters who do this, would put specks of white or specks of light blue or even light green in dark areas. And your eye would go, why would they do that? But as you get farther and farther away from the painting, the way the light hits it, the way your eyes see it, all of that blends to actually help with the shadowing, with the lighting within the painting. And your eye doesn't see the white or blue specks really at all, unless you're looking for them. It definitely just sees the blends of colors. And all that to say that this dyer in Knit Circus, I was very impressed because I could tell the art knowledge that I have, little though it is, tells me that she also knows this, and not a lot of dyers go that far in their dyeing to do that and to put specks of white or even maybe, I don't know, the raw yarn, which is usually white, and to leave those in little teeny, teeny portions of the yarn. Not very often. I think, you know, let's say out of every 20 rows, I came across it once, in rows that are, I think I got up to like 400 stitches. So very, very long transitions where you would even see that. But I was impressed. Like the art knowledge, the artist in me was like, wow, she knows what she's doing here, because I very rarely see that in dyeing, in both whether it's fabric or particularly yarn, where it can be very, very difficult. So anyway, just thought I'd give a plug for Knit Circus Yarns and how impressed I was with their product. Again, not inexpensive, but well worth it. The quality and of not just the product, but of the person who's dyeing it and knowing what they're doing is quite evident. So to me, well worth it. I would, when I'm ready in terms of having another project ready, I will not hesitate to go back there on Etsy. So anyway, just wanted to give them a plug because I so enjoyed knitting the Holden shawl with that. Right now, I do have a sewing project in mind. I know this podcast has been very sewing light, like very little, close to none, right? I'm slowly getting my mojo and desire to get back at my sewing machine back. I think lately, I'll be honest, it's been about all knitting all the time. Part of that has been because I was sick, and that was the only thing I felt like doing creatively was knitting. And I've just got so many knitting projects in mind. I'm just thoroughly enjoying it. I'm so enjoying yarn right now. So I'm currently knitting a pair of socks for me. I'm using Regia Arnie and Carlos, the Star Night colorway. I've seen this many times on the video podcasts I've been watching, the video knitting podcasts I've been watching. Many people are using this yarn, which is where I first discovered it. So I decided I had to try it because I love the Fair Isle-like, or Faux Isle, I should say, the Faux Isle patterning you automatically get with the dyeing, the way that this yarn was dyed up. Now, it is a commercial yarn. So, of course, you know, it comes off of a machine that does that patterning, dye patterning for you. But regardless, it's a great yarn. It is a little bit more woolly, scratchy. I would not be able to use it against my skin other than my feet. Like, and I don't know why. Like sometime, I don't know. We'll see long term. I have very sensitive skin to pure wool. And it's part of the reason why I really only knit shawls is because, or have been, because I am wearing, an article of clothing as a layer between me and the wool. Because as much as I might love wearing the item, anytime I've worn wool against just my skin, I start itching within like an hour, if not sooner. It depends on the type of wool. So my skin can be very sensitive. But I don't seem to have that same kind of problem when I'm wearing my socks. I've knit several pairs of wool socks now, and I wore them several times over the winter and fall, and I can't really say that it was a problem. It's been a problem for me, so I don't know. I might try a pair of mittens or something out of this and see how my hands do, although my hands do tend to be sensitive as well. So I don't know. Maybe it's just my feet because I walk on them every day. They're a little tougher and rougher, but I don't know. Anyway, the Regia, Arnie, and Carlos. I'm seeing more and more yarn lines are doing this type of faux aisle where you don't have to, use multiple strands of yarn to get patterning in your knitting. They're doing it for you based on the way they have dyed up and done the print pattern on the yarn. So it's kind of cool. It definitely keeps your interest as you're knitting because you're like just and it's only two or three rows until you get to the next color or pattern starts to emerge. So it keeps your interest because you want to know what's coming next. So those are fun. I'm almost done. I think I'm about a third of the way up the leg on both pairs of socks. So I'm working on those. I'm almost done. And then I also cast on the Mrs. Blanding's shawl. This is a pattern by Casapinka. And I am using two skeins from A Homespun House, which is a video podcast. And Molly is the host. And she started dyeing yarn, I don't know how long ago, but couple months ago, maybe more, like 6 months ago, I think. And she's doing phenomenally well. You have to catch her updates to get the yarn colors you want, and it can be very difficult. She sells out very quickly when she does an update, but I managed to get a couple skeins from her. And so I am using for this shawl, I am using the Olsen Base fingering weight. This is a fingering weight shawl, and the ash colorway, which is a dove gray color, it's a tonal. And then I am using for the main color, the pop color basically in the shawl is her sparkle base fingering weight. It's called Mirth, and it is a tonal fuchsia and hot pink color. And it's not a color that I wear a whole lot. I'm trying to, though, get more accent pieces in my wardrobe because I tend to wear kind of, I don't want to say a uniform because I don't technically wear a uniform, but black pants, solid color top or sweater is pretty much my go-to. In the fall and winter, I do wear either a black skirt with tights, or I have a brown or a gray skirt with tights, a top, a solid color top or sweater. And then just a, simple, very simple jewelry. So I don't want to say I'm plain because, my tops in this, even in solid colors, I wear jewel tones. I wear my favorite fall colors, that kind of thing. But I would like some more accent pieces to kind of jazz up my clothes a little bit. So I figured, step out of your comfort zone, pick a color that you like, but you don't often wear a whole lot. And I figured I love dove gray. I love tonal grays. And I really do like, I'm not a baby pink or kind of cutesy pink color. but I've always loved the warmer fuchsia or even the cool fuchsia colors in different shades and tones of that. So I decided to go for it because she had a very pretty one. I think it's called Mirth, but it looked beautiful online. And so I just decided to go for it. And it is, I was only able to snag it in the sparkle base, which has some stellina in it, which at first I was kind of, I was like, I don't know if I wanted to have the sparkle too. Like I was going out on a limb enough getting the fuchsia. But when it came, and now that I've been knitting it up, it's very subtle. It's almost, you almost have to look, you pretty much have to look twice or even three times to see it. She was not heavy-handed with the sparkle, let's put it that way, in her yarn. Some of them I've seen, it's very sparkly, and other dyers or other yarn companies. But hers is very subtle, and so I'm fine with it. And it actually is knitting up very beautifully. It's lovely to knit with. It's not splitty at all. And her dyeing is very, very good. She does a very good job with these tonals. It's beautiful. So I'm enjoying that. It's a very simple pattern. I am learning a new stitch. It's the pillar stitch, which is similar to the flower stitch, where you purl three, don't take the three stitches off the left needle, you knit back into it. You don't take them off the needle and you purl back into it again. So you're purl knitting, purling three times into the same set of three stitches. And it's a little fiddly. It definitely slows me down in my knitting and when I'm doing a row with this particular stitch in it. However, now that I've done several rows and I can see the fabric being formed, it's beautiful. It is well worth taking the time to do this decorative stitch. And it's kind of neat because most of the projects I've done before are straight garter stitch, straight stockinette stitch, and that's it. And I'm happy with it and I let the yarn do the talking. This one, the yarn is doing the talking, but there is a little bit of that decorative element. And what I like is that it's the flower stitch is when I'm using that pink yarn. So now that the fabric is forming, it's actually starting to look like little mini roses almost. Not quite. It's not a rose stitch. And there is a stitch that you can do that really does look like a rose. But it's definitely because of the pooling of some of the pinks and that kind of thing. It's making it look like little mini flowers. And so this will be a very nice and special shawl once it's done because I'm really liking how the fabric's knitting up. So that's what I've been working on. Oh, sorry. I meant to talk about the sewing, a little bit of the sewing that I'm doing. I got off on a tangent, went from knitting to sewing to knitting and now the sewing. Since I've been knitting so much and I've been watching so many video podcasts with knitters and they've been showing off their bags that they use to hold their knitting and some of them are fancier than others. Some of them are very simple. You know, you can hold your knitting in a Walmart plastic bag. It doesn't matter. But of course, if you're a maker, if you're a crafter, you like getting a little crafty with it. And goodness knows if there's one thing I have plenty of besides yarn now, is fabric. And so I have plenty of fabric to make myself. As much as I love to support Etsy shops and bag makers, and there's some really, really nice bags out there and people who are, you know, starting their own small business, making their knitting, making knitting bags. I don't need to buy a knitting bag. I'm buying plenty of yarn from these indie dyers. I need to use up some of my fabric and make my own knitting bags. So that's what I've decided I'm going to do. There's a simple, the drawstring bag pattern that I've used for several I've made in the past. And that is one, I have some fabric that I've pulled out that I'm going to quickly make some of those up for myself and my, maybe one or two for my mother-in-law, who she's also a voracious knitter now. And There's another bag that I saw on Instagram that intrigued me and looks fun. It's called the Retreat Bag from Emmeline or Emmeline. I should say Emmeline. Emmeline Bags, because it looks L-I-N-E is the same way I finish Madeline's name. So Emmeline Bags, which is a website, and she sells both bag making supplies. And I see quite a few of the So Sweetness. She's a well-known bag maker or bag pattern maker. Very good. I know Pam over at Hip to Be a Square has test made some of her bags and has worked with her on some things, but she sells her patterns and I think her book, but she also sells bag hardware and at a pretty reasonable price. And this retreat bag, what I liked about it is that it does require you purchase one of these metal, I want to say it's like a little mini rod that you use as the closure for your bag. So if you've ever seen one of those bags, not the old fashioned snap bag, like a coin purse type, but almost picture the coin purse, but without the little knobs that you use to open and close it, just the rods. Now this one is much thinner. It's maybe a quarter inch thick. And you insert it into this retreat bag, the way the pattern is written, and it forms a solid closure for you. The pattern itself doesn't have a handle, so I will probably just sew a simple handle into it, because I like to carry my bag with me wherever I'm going. But it looks like a very simple pattern. You can put a pocket on the inside, which is handy. And so, yeah, I'm going to try and make this one too. I'm waiting on the hardware. I just yesterday purchased a couple of these rods that you need to close them in a couple of the different sizes that she has the pattern. So anyway, that's what I've been working on making. I am still making or painting some things. I've been working in my art journal. I've been asked several times to start sharing some of that. I will. One of the things that I'm planning to do is some short video podcasts of some of the things I'm working on. I'm not planning to go really to a vlog and to do a full podcast, shall we say, video podcast. But I, for a long, long time, and I've mentioned it before, wanted to do a little bit of video, and I have several camera setups. The only thing I think has been the issue for me when I've tried it, because I have tried it before, is when I'm available to do a video in the evening, the lighting is not great. And so I've put off for a while now purchasing some lighting, which, you know, you can easily do to make your lighting in any room better. But I think more than likely in the next month or so, I'm just going to bite the bullet. And I found a couple of different ones that are not too expensive that I'm going to try out, and we'll see. So I'll keep you posted on that. So what have I been watching lately? Well, other than, like I mentioned, the knitting podcasts, and there's one sewing one that I've really enjoyed. It's called Sew Over It, S-E-W, Over It. And she has two stores in London. I think one is in Islington and one is in Clapham, I think. And they look great. I've gone on her website. She's basically, you know, sewing studios where she teaches people to sew. She sells, you know, carefully curated by her and her team, fabrics and sewing supplies and sewing notions and just fun stuff she finds in her travels for sewing and sewists. But her main thing is to teach people dressmaking and, you know, just pattern drafting and things like that. But she has a YouTube channel, and she, once a month, she talks about what she's sewing. And what I enjoy is she's adorable. She's very cute. She's got a great, very petite figure, perfect for video and making simple projects and showing them off well. And you can tell she's very skilled and knowledgeable at sewing. But what I like is she's fun, but she also, when she shows what she's made, both for herself and maybe in her classes, she goes into how she did it. And, you know, she definitely, she's a pattern maker. So she says, you know, I used this pattern, which you can find on my site. But she will say, this is how I adapted it to my size. This is how you can adapt it to your size. This is what you need to do if you're using this particular type of fabric that I chose. She took a trip to India and she purchased some fabric in, you know, the markets there, which look phenomenal to shop at. But the sizing, you know, of the way the fabric comes off the bolt is different in quite a number of the fabrics you might buy. So she showed how, you know, she was able to adjust the pattern to fit this to particular fabrics that she had purchased in India. So I like that. She's giving, you know, she gives little tips and tricks and insight into making adjustments as needed, as we all need to when we're sewing. So she's very enjoyable to watch, and she has quite a few videos that you can get started with if you're interested. The other thing that, of course, I've been watching is Outlander season 2 just started, and I watched Saturday's episode, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I did enjoy it. I was a little confused at first because I'm like, it's been a long time since I read Dragonfly and Amber. So I was like, it took me a minute to remember, like, I remember the basics of it, but for the most part, I remember it taking a lot of the book taking place in France. And when they didn't start off in France, I was like, what's going on? Where's my French people? But anyway, it was good. And yeah, of course, everybody has their own opinions about it. And you know, if they don't stick exactly to the book and all of that, people get upset. But I am enjoying it for the entertainment that it is and the fabulous, fabulous acting by Tobias, is it McKenzie? I cannot remember his last name. It's the man, the actor who plays both Frank and Captain Jack Randall. I'm telling you, the man should get an Emmy upon an Emmy upon an Emmy. Just from season 1 alone and the roles that he played and the way, I mean, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And the nuances of just this first episode of his role again blew me away. I was very impressed once again by his acting abilities. I think they're all great. I love, you know, the woman who I'm very bad with names. The woman who plays Claire, the man who plays Jamie, I think his name is Sam something. Love them. Love Murtaugh. All of them. But I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's I'm Gryffindor with some Slytherin, but I think it's the Slytherin in me that I've always loved a villain. I really have. Now, I don't want to come across any in real life, but in acting, I have always, always loved the villain roles. Like, for example, as much as I love Meryl Streep in many of the kind, wonderful roles she has played over the years, I loved her in Devil Wears Prada. Like, I could care less about the main chick. I forgot her name now. That's terrible. It was all about Meryl for me. All about Meryl. And the one, Death Becomes Her. Yeah, that's taking you back, right? Anyway, long tangent. Definitely, definitely, if you are into Outlander, or even if you're not, I think even if you were not into the books, I still recommend this. If you like history, if you like action adventure, if you are just intrigued by, you know, different lands and different cultures. I mean, they just do such a good job. If you like costuming, it's all in this. It's all in this. And they just do such a good job. All of them, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. They just do such a good job. So Outlander, definitely recommend that. I'm not even going to talk about a classic movie. I know I promised one before, but to be honest, I've been watching so many podcasts. It's really bad. I may have to put the classic movie on hold for a little bit because I'm watching a lot of podcasts. I'm watching a lot of Outlander type, like Netflix shows. I think, what's the one now with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda? Being Frankie and Johnny. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's been a couple weeks since I watched that one. Loved it. House of Cards. Orange is the New Black. Wentworth is really good. If you like Orange is the New Black, you must watch Wentworth. And that's because that's the British version. And several people who I've recommended that one to, Wentworth to, and they were, because they were big Orange is the New Black fans, they have come back and said, like me, I hate to say it, but I liked Wentworth a little better. I think it was a little better. And it is, because it is. I'm sorry. It's British. It is. There's just something about British dramas that they just know how to do it. They just know how to do it so well. Anyway, Foyle's War. Yeah. So the classic movies, I really can't off the top of my head recommend one that I recently watched. On Easter, I did watch Easter Parade, but I think I've recommended that one already because that's just kind of something I do. I always like to watch Easter Parade on or around Easter. But anyway, for books, I recently finished one book that comes out next month. So I usually do not like to do this because I know if I talk about a book and really like it, you might want to go out and get it, but you don't have too much longer to wait. It comes out on May 3rd, and it's by an author that I recommended on a previous book, A Man Called Ove. Frederick Bachman is the author, and his new book is Brit Marie Was Here. This book, and there's one he wrote in between, something about, is my grandmother told me to tell you I'm sorry? And I have a copy of it, but I have not read that one. For some reason, I skipped that one and moved on to Brit Marie Was Here. What I like about Frederick Bachman is he writes very well whole stories about an older generation of people. You know, people in their 60s, maybe even 70s. And so often, books are more about people in what they call middle age, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s. I really like that he writes good stories and not just like, you know, 100 page, 200 page stories. I mean, this book was over 400 pages long. He writes good, solid stories about people in that stage of life, an older generation, but people who have lived both through young adulthood, adulthood, raising the family, all of that. You know, maybe they've lost a spouse and they're going through that, a different stage in their life. Brit Marie Was Here is about a woman who you quickly learn is, while she has not been diagnosed with Asperger's, she definitely is on the spectrum, because she has much more than just OCD. Like she definitely has all the traits of an adult with Asperger's. Now, he doesn't say in the book, Brit Marie has Asperger's. I'm just saying she's definitely a very, it's right or wrong, black or white. This is the way things should be done. There's a certain time you do things, you know, down to the minute she will check things, you know, everything has to be in its place or she is not comfortable. Those are the kinds of traits that I'm talking about. And you also learn very quickly that she has left her husband of many years. And you learn through her voice, because it's the whole book is through her voice. What happened in their marriage, how she feels about it, how she feels about this new place she has landed. And she has landed in this little town, and it's all set in Norway. Or excuse me, it's either Norway or Sweden. I'm sorry. It's not spelled out clearly in the book. But anyway, she's landed in this little town that the main source of employment has moved on. Has left. And so the only people left in the town are children and people who have nowhere else to go or couldn't afford to leave. And she ends up through a funny set of circumstances. I'm not going to give away. There's really, really good and funny dialogue in this book. You do have to be patient with it. Like I said, he's not an action adventure writer. This is definitely a novel, a literary novel, and you just kind of have to sit down and enjoy the story as it unfolds. And it does take a little while to unfold, but along the way you learn about Britt Marie, and you learn, just like with A Man Called Ove, where just because a person doesn't seem to care or seem to have feelings about this or that the same way everybody else seems to get excited about it, or seem to be nonchalant about it, you know, whatever, their sense of right or wrong, their sense of this is the way things should be, lands them in a good place. And what's funny is Britt Marie doesn't come across, even from the beginning of the book, actually as a very likable person at all. It's funny because the children that she comes across in this little town actually end up liking her, and like her from the beginning. And they think she's funny. And she ends up, a person who's never really had friends, ends up making friends with the people in this town through this job that she gets through this agency. And like I said, the beginning of the book kind of sets it up, and it's just a funny dialogue between Britt Marie and this headhunter job, the person that they go to when they're looking for a job. And she ends up being a coordinator for a recreation center in this little town, and it's dilapidated. There's no money in the budget for it. Like, nothing can be done. But these kids that keep coming to this recreation center every day because they don't have anywhere else to go, make up their own soccer pitch, I guess it's called football pitch. And it's almost like, I want to say, the way I grew up as a kid, where if you didn't have the fancy net and goal or the bases, you used, you know, your backpacks or whatever became the bases or became the goal posts. Like, two backpacks on each end became the goalposts, right? Like, you just used what was on hand, right? Two bikes. If somebody had a bike, you put one bike and another bike on either side, and that became the goal, right? You just used what was on hand. And these kids are using cans and, you know, soda bottles, whatever, to make their goalposts, you know, because they don't have anything. And again, the circumstances that go on in the book, Britt Marie becomes their soccer coach. And it's, yeah. So, and they go to the local championship. And basically the book is about how Britt Marie changes the mindset of the people in this town, the mindset of the children, and along the way herself. She changes some of the things she thought she held true. She becomes a little bit flexible on some of the people that she didn't want in her life. She changes her mind on or changes back. And it's just a very good, heartwarming story, similar to how you feel about Major Pettigrew's Last Stand, or like I said, A Man Called Ove, or the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society, those kinds of books that are just heartwarming stories, often about one or two main characters who are characters in of themselves. It's just a really good read for that. So that's Britt Marie Was Here by Frederick Bachman, and that comes out on May 3rd. The other book that I recently finished, and I think I've talked about this series before, is Sixth Grave on the Edge by Dorinda Jones. And this is the Charlie Davidson Grim Reaper series. I have not read one of the books in this series in a little while. I think there are 8 or 9 of them now, and I kind of spaced them out purposefully because I enjoy the series so much, and it's one of those where I don't want it to be over, so I spaced them out. I used to do that with the Janet Ivanovich Stephanie Plum books, but I'm caught up on those, and those are so similar that, meh. But if you're a fan of the Stephanie Plum series, or what's her name? J.S. Scott series, or any of the other, there's some paranormal romance writers who write good series, funny characters. What I love about Charlie Davidson, who's the main character in this series, she's a Grim Reaper. But she's a real person. Dead people use her as a portal to pass through to heaven. But she's also a private investigator, and that's what she does for money. And she's very snarky, very sarcastic and funny. And she has a very funny sidekick friend who also works in her PI office, named Cookie, who also has a daughter named Amber, who's smarter than both of them, of course. And the love interest is Reyes, who happens to be the son of Satan. He's the son of Lucifer. And that's her love interest. Now, I do recommend starting with the first book. But what I like about what Dorinda Jones is doing is she's moving the love interest portion along. She's moving towards, you can kind of tell an end goal in either the series or, you know, she's moving towards, more than likely, once she decides to end the series, there's an end goal in mind and she's moving it along versus I'm picking on the Stephanie Plum series. It's not that I don't read them, but I think I've mentioned before how I feel about them. But anyway, it's that where those kind of stay stagnant and nothing happens really new in the love interest portion or with Stephanie's life. What I like about this series is that Dorinda Jones is, albeit slowly, she is moving the storyline along. Yeah, so there's that. So you definitely, you know, are willing and wanting to see what is going to come out and what's going to happen in the next book. She doesn't leave it as a hard cliffhanger every book. There have been a couple, I think, now in the six that I have read so far. I think maybe 2 or 3 where she did leave it as a cliffhanger. But I guess, you know, if you're on book 2 and you know that there's 8 or 9 in the series, you kind of know that she doesn't die in the end of that book. So you're not like heartbroken. Let's just put it that way. The other thing is that Dorinda Jones is not, she doesn't, as an author, back down from writing about some of the harder things that come with death. And that it's not always pretty and it's not always pleasant. And sometimes, you know, sometimes children die, sometimes people who didn't deserve to, or, you know, die do. And sometimes people who, you know, whether you believe it or in it or not, with some people, just horrible people who might deserve to die, don't. You know, she doesn't back down from those topics within her books. Now, again, they're not literary novels, so they're not like full out descriptions of the way a child might die or something like that. But the gorier parts, the harder parts are some of the things that happened to Charlie in her private investigating and things like that, and what she has to take on personally, sometimes to protect those she loves, can be a little hard to read or listen to. But anyway, I thoroughly enjoy this series. I was reminded now that I've just finished book six, that I'm still enjoying the series, and I wanted to mention it again if you are looking for a good series maybe to start as we move into summer and vacations and breaks. I'm in beach weeks and things like that here in the U.S. Because I know my friends in Australia, I just talked to one on Skype the other day. It's getting a little chillier where she is, so she's not looking at that. But anyway, that is the book I read is Sixth Grave on the Edge by Dorinda Jones. But there is the first book in the series is what I recommend you start with. And that's about it. That's all I've got for today. I think that's plenty. Of course, once again, I said, oh, I've only got about 20, 30 minutes worth of talking to do. I haven't hardly done any crafting. And here we are almost 90 minutes in. So, but it's been a while. So if you have stuck with me till the end, I thank you very much. I have every intention of not losing my voice anytime soon and coming to you in about 3, maybe 4 weeks. Maybe sooner, we'll see. But until then, I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye. For show notes, visit my blog, craftygardenmom.com. If you'd like to send me an email, you can do that at TanishaQuilts@yahoo.com. On Ravelry and Goodreads, I am Tanisha or Tanisha N. On Instagram and Twitter, I am Crafty Garden Mom. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.